Hello, it's Friday afternoon again, and you're listening to me, Alan O'Donoghue. I'm a teacher of computing and ICT at Our Lady's High School, which is in Preston, in Lancashire, way up in the north of England. Each week, I teach two or three lessons with a GCSE computing class with 26 pupils, that's 23 boys and three girls, and after I've taught my lessons, I record a podcast which shares some of the things that I've been teaching with my class in the week. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I don't profess to be an expert at this sort of thing. This is only my second year with this particular GCSE, but I'm sharing and recording these podcasts, hoping that some of you will listen to these, and maybe if you hear some technical mistakes or inaccuracies, that you might correct it, and also that you might get into a discussion with me about the way that I'm teaching, either to, you know, to maybe to ask me why I'm doing things in a certain way. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. One way you can get in touch with me is on Twitter. I'm technoteacher, at technoteacher. That's T-E-K-N-O. And I'd love to hear if you're doing things like this with your class, and if not, you know, why you think, what you think of what I'm doing. So this week I've had three lessons with my year 10 class, and they fit in quite neatly with the previous week's lessons. So the first lesson on Monday was a theory lesson, and we picked up from where we'd had our lesson in the previous week, which was all about RAM and ROM and virtual memories and crashing, loading, bootstraps, volatile, non-volatile. So the first thing I set the class when they came in was three questions that I wanted them to answer. And they weren't supposed to be questions that had obvious answers. So the three questions ran like this. The first one was, which is a DVD most like and why? And they could choose between RAM or ROM. And the second question was, which is flash memory most like and why? Is it RAM or ROM? And then the third question was, what effect can be noticed when the RAM is nearly full on a computer, and explain how virtual memory is used to reduce this effect? So I asked the children to write the answers in their books, and then we went through and we discussed the answers. So a lot of children, there was mixed agreement on questions one and two, which was good, because that's what I wanted really, to get a discussion going. I didn't want it just to be a straightforward, you know, DVD, well, it's ROM. So the consensus amongst the class was that DVDs was most like ROM, which is read-only memory, because you can't make changes to it. But then one or two quite rightly pointed out that you can actually buy some DVDs that you can, they're read-writable, so you can actually overwrite things that are on them. So that was good that we had a discussion about that. And then flash memory, so some were saying that they weren't really sure with what flash memory was, so there was a discussion around that, and then reaching the consensus that flash memory is a type of RAM that... actually, good point here. So you can access this in a non-sequential order. However, it's non-volatile, which means when you switch the power off, it's kept on there. So again, I was deliberately giving sort of provocative questions so that we would not go for the very easy answers. The third question, not so many children in the class had figured out what was going to happen when your RAM was nearly full. Some had predicted that the computer might crash, which could happen. That could be one effect. And as regards virtual memory, there was only one child in the class who understood what that was. So there was a little bit of an explanation, discussion about how computers, when they start to run out of RAM, they will use portions of the hard disk as a temporary solution, but it's not perfect because the hard disk cannot deliver data at the same speed as RAM can. So you've got this swapping things in and out, which is quite a slow process. So the next thing was I brought in some examples. I had some hard disks, I had some DVDs, and I brought in some sticks of RAM. Now, these are all things that we had in school that hadn't been disposed of, because although they're still working, they're in perfect order, so I had a stack of 40 gigabyte hard disks, but it's not cost-effective to use them in school now because, for example, we've got one suite where we've had Windows 7 installed, and the amount of space that Windows 7 takes up just... we just can't keep the hard disks in the machine. So we've got this stack of 40 gigabyte hard disks. So I passed them around, and the DVDs as well. And these were DVDs that had things written to them. So when you flipped them over and looked underneath, you could see it looked like there was something different than a blank one. And the sticks of RAM, these were, I can't remember, I think they're 512 megabyte sticks that were taken out of a server before it was upgraded. So I asked them simply to take up one of them and to do a quick sketch of it, but to try and label some of the features that they think would apply to it. So was it primary or secondary storage? Did they think it was volatile or non-volatile? Did it have any moving parts on it? Was it solid state? What other features did it have? What was the capacity of it? What did they think the price was? So I gave them about 4 or 5 minutes on each one, so they should have had in their books a sketch of a hard disk, a sketch of a DVD, and a sketch of some RAM, and then some of the features labelled on there. Now, as they were doing this, I went round to check on their homeworks, where they were supposed to bring in a model of a computer. So one child brought in a cardboard box, and in the cardboard box, he'd got some parts from a computer at home. He tried overclocking it, and the whole thing just blew up. So he brought all those. He'd managed to finally find a use for those components. So he glued them down, and then he used some bits of string to join them together just to show the relationship. Somebody else used some bits of cardboard to build a model. What else did we have? Somebody brought in bits of styrofoam that they'd build a model from. And then there was the cake. So they sent me, the girl and the two boys who made the cake, they sent me some photographs, like a gallery of photographs of the cake. And they'd use things like apple laces and cherry laces to show how these things were connected together. And they brought me in a slice as well, which was really nice, in a tub. So I saved that for later on. What else did we do in that lesson? So I noticed we're spending a lot of time discussing the more theoretical aspects, and they seem to really enjoy building games in Scratch, the platform game. So I set over the last third of the lesson to have a little bit of an exposition of the games that they built. And there were some really fantastic examples of games, and it was, you know, really enjoyable going around and having a look and giving them feedback on what they'd done. Now, the following lesson, I was absent again. This time I was at a computing conference in London with Osiris, and that was a great day. So before we had that lesson, I asked the children to come up with ideas for ways that they could improve the experience for the players of the games. So we were talking about things like adding in more features such as game over screens, title screens, more lives, how you could have increasing difficulty, how you could have we searched around to find out what were these kind of things. So the plan was on the Tuesday, when they had their lesson, they were going to implement those into their developed platform game in Scratch. And then I was back in school on Wednesday, and I decided to test them again at the beginning of the lesson. So I've watched some colleagues in another curriculum area in school have been using whiteboards and pens as a quick way of displaying answers to a question. And I noticed I've been using books quite a lot. So I discussed this with the class, and I said, and we have these homework planners, and on the back of the planners, it's just blank and white and smooth. So we're going to use them as temporary whiteboards. So I explained this was to figure out the difference between a Boolean or a string. Now, I said what I expected really was that some of them, their definition of a string should be pretty secure, but I wasn't expecting at this point that they would all know exactly what a Boolean is. I'm just wiping my whiteboard. It's Friday, and I don't want to come in on Monday and discover it's been there all weekend. It's harder to shift it. Sorry, getting a bit distracted. Anyway, back to... So I then wrote some values on the board. So the first thing I wrote on the board was true, capital T, R-U-E. And I said, now this could be a Boolean or a string. What I want you to do with the whiteboard pens on the back of your, on the back of your planners, do you think it's a Boolean or a string? So some wrote down string, some wrote down Boolean, and it's, okay, everybody show me your whiteboards. And I think the class were split about 50-50. So I asked one of the children who'd written string down to explain why, and I said, well, a string, it's a series of letters and characters and numbers and things, and that's what you've written, so therefore it's a string. And I said, well, you're right, true is a string, but can it be a Boolean as well? So some children were saying, well, Booleans can be true or false and ones and zeros. So I said, well, you had to choose whether it was a Boolean or a string. As it's definitely a Boolean, I'm going to go with Boolean. But obviously, if you write string down, it's not wrong, but Boolean was the answer I was looking for. Then the next one I wrote down on the board was the word correct. So I'm trying to catch them out here. And I think about a third of the class thought, oh, yeah, so something could be correct or wrong, true or false. So about a third of the class wrote down that it was a Boolean. So, and then the other two-thirds wrote down string. So we had the same kind of discussion again. Why did you think it was a Boolean? Why did you think it was a string? And, of course, the word correct is not a Boolean. It's a string. And then I wrote down the number one. And again, same thing. Off. And then I think the last thing I wrote down was 27A. And at this point, everybody's getting it. Yeah, they know the difference between a Boolean and a string. Then I set them a homework. Now, on the OCR GCSE computing syllabus, they have to be able to describe inputs and outputs that would be used for people with specific needs. For example, somebody who didn't have use of hands or arms, somebody who didn't have sight, somebody who didn't have good hearing. So I asked them to create a Prezi. Now, Prezi is not something I've ever mentioned to them before, so there's lots of questions. What's Prezi? So somebody was able to tell us in the class that Prezi is, well, he said it's PowerPoint, and I corrected him. No, it's not PowerPoint. PowerPoint creates presentations. Prezi also creates presentations, but it's a tool that you can very quickly demonstrate your ideas. So I wanted them to discover what this tool was like, but at the same time, they had to create a Prezi about two inputs and two output devices specifically for people with some sort of need. And then I wanted to check a little bit more about their understanding from the previous lesson. This was where we looked at the difference between magnetic, optical, and this time I introduced solid-state drives. So rather than write things down in the book, I gave them a few problem scenarios. So, for example, you've got 200 photographs. There's a group of your friends. You want to share the photographs with, so they've got their own copy. You're not going to send them over the internet because there's quite a lot of them, and you're not going to upload them to a photo sharing site. So which would be the best way of sharing it, magnetic, optical, or solid state? Then I gave them another example. You've got a really, really thin laptop. You're trying to choose what's the best device for storing things on. You don't need a huge amount of storage. You've got quite a high budget, and so the answer I was looking there for was for solid state. And then we had a bit more time at the end of the lesson to play and develop their platform games. Right, so that's it. Now, I'm recently pleased to announce a couple of things. One is I've been awarded the title of Master Teacher, and I'm one of 28 people around the country. Computing at School, which has received some funding from the DfE, and it's part of this network of excellence. So wherever you are in the country, you should find that near you, you've got at least one Master Teacher and one lead school. So it could be that you want to get in touch with them to find out if what you're doing is what they're doing, and you know, they'll be organising meetings and training. So I recommend you go along to the CAS Online website. So that's the Computing at School community site. You can sign up, you can find out about all sorts of events that are happening. And I imagine there's going to be a huge flurry of these happening in the new year between January and March. What else can I recommend to you? Well, all the stuff that people are talking about at the moment seems to be happening in the Computing at School online community. Another little bit of news I was really pleased about. This week, we got the results of our Ofsted inspection. I don't know if you heard in an earlier podcast, I had a visit. I was teaching a Python lesson to Year 7 when I got my visit, and the inspector was really pleased with the lesson, so much that she, when pressed, she gave me an outstanding grade for what she'd seen. And she particularly liked the fact that the children were putting their hands up and I was trying to get them to be more resourceful and support each other rather than just automatically assume I was going to help them. And not only did I receive an outstanding for that, but the school received an outstanding in all four categories. So that's, yay, the nice kind of thing to get before Christmas. Right, I really hope that you are getting the most out of these, or maybe it's time for me to be thinking about winding it up. I don't know. Let me know if you're finding them useful, and if there's questions and whatever, get in touch. As I mentioned on Twitter, I'm at technoteacher. You can email me. I've got a Computing at School email address now. It's alan.odonoghue@computingatschool.com or something like that. I should have it on a piece of paper. Thank you. Bye.